lift your head, weary sinner.
Well, it's Tuesday afternoon. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. That means it's another hour of talking about life and talking about hope and talking about things that are going on around the country in terms of life and pro-life legislation. And so we got a lot to cover today because what I want to do today is talk to you about human dignity, talk to you about the peddling of despair that we are seeing across the board out of the abortion industry. And then I want to look at some lawsuits that are happening around the world that should concern anyone that certainly is a Christian, and also concern anyone that stands for the life movement. So we're going to look at all of that today. So should be fun as we look at the number of different areas where we can make an impact. And so where we can make an impact at Hope here in Knoxville, where we can make an impact for the greater life movement in this country and even around the world. Because again, we can look at times we get focused, and rightly so, on what's going on in our country. And what's going on in our country is a million abortions every single year, give or take a few. What's going on around the world is 40 to 50 million abortions every single year. And so there is much to be concerned about, but I do want you to understand there's a lot of positive happening and a lot of good happening through pregnancy centers and through other organizations, as we saw 500,000 people come together a couple weeks ago in Washington, D.C. So where to start? Let's start with the peddling of despair that we are seeing. So this week, Lila Rose, who is the president and founder of Life Action, released a video conversation with former Planned Parenthood employees. Now, this conversation covers abortion quotas, incentives, and the despair that is peddled to their patients. Those are my words, not theirs. But the quotas and incentives are things that occur in the abortion industry. I find it interesting that our detractors, those who disagree with what we stand for, choose to paint the life movement as barrier creators. They claim our motives are deceptive and designed to prevent women from getting health care. This, of course, is not true, but this message penetrates the narrative and is spread far and wide. But you see, reality is a funny thing. Reality doesn't care about your feelings. It doesn't care about a narrative, and it doesn't care about an agenda. So in light of that, let's look at the reality of abortion and life. The video that I referenced covers a number of areas, but tonight I want to focus on the despair that is peddled to women that find themselves facing an unplanned pregnancy. The former employee featured in the video, and you can find this video on Life Action's Facebook page, Live Action, their Facebook page, you can find the video there. The former employee featured in this video is asked about the conversations that were had with patients that were unable to pay for a procedure or service. This is where despair became the message. This employee claims that they were instructed to ask the patient a couple of questions. Now listen to these questions. And I think it's important that we hone in on these questions. If you cannot afford to pay anything today for your appointment, how could you possibly afford a child? Do you know how much diapers are? Have you looked at the cost of a car seat? You see, this line of questioning is designed to point women to the quote-unquote obvious conclusion of termination. These questions are designed to enlist a particular answer and point out weaknesses. If you cannot afford our services, you will never be able to afford a baby. Let's help you in this becomes the abortion provider's mantra. You see, this line of thinking in 2017 America is truly remarkable. Politics aside, the amount of governmental and nonprofit assistance available for moms and babies in this country is far-reaching and readily available and accessible. This, again, is the reality. However, this reality hurts an abortion provider's narrative and their profit line. Quotas and incentives are in place to encourage and require a particular level of production. We see this in just about every industry, so it should come as no surprise that we are now seeing it in the abortion conglomerate. Selling cars and selling abortions should not be a similar practice, yet reality doesn't lie, and this is where we find ourselves today. Now, you can call me a prude or old-fashioned, but I think turning the womb into an assembly line is dangerous and anti-woman. This type of despair peddling is not only affecting the unborn lives tucked away in what should be their safe space, it is also damaging to that woman who needs proper care, guidance, and assistance. Maybe her choice would be different if she were connected to a governmental agency or a nonprofit that could offer a lifeline. It truly breaks my heart to hear this former employee recount her conversations with abortion-vulnerable women. And I'm amazed that the desire to turn a profit outweighs the desire to truly help a mom and baby in need. We are all well aware of the cost of diapers, car seats, clothes, and formula. The cost of these items is not up for debate. Again, that is a reality. Having babies costs money. This, however, is not a barrier to parenting. At Hope and at thousands of clinics across this country, we choose not to peddle despair to our patients. Instead, we encourage and empower women. Apart from our medical services, we offer parenting classes, mentoring, and a baby shower where diapers, clothes, car seats, and strollers are provided at no cost. We desire to forego profit for people as we provide every service at no cost to the patient. So let us come together for our neighbors today that find themselves in need and facing unplanned circumstances. May we not see them as a dollar sign or a means to an end, but as a creation with a purpose deserving of love, respect, and dignity. You see, folks, that is our pro-life ethic. So when we see these videos, when we hear these conversations, we are moved. We should be moved to act. It should make us sick to our stomach. It should concern us that the abortion industry is providing pizza parties for those clinics that meet their abortion quota. It should concern us that the abortion industry are providing incentives and time off and employee of the month for those that sell the most abortions. So regardless of what side of the fence you stand on, whether you are pro-life or pro-choice, whether you're okay with abortion in certain circumstances or in no circumstances, or you're okay with abortion across the board, does it not concern you that women in our communities, women across this country, does it not concern you that their wombs are becoming an assembly line? Does it not concern you that organizations that claim to be nonprofit are actually making a profit off all of these women and the terminating of their pregnancy? So regardless if you stand with me in pro-life in every scenario and every situation, is that type of thing okay with you? So if you say abortion is okay because it's a woman's choice, well, is it okay that the abortion industry is turning into car salesmen? Is it okay that they see these patients as dollar signs and not as people that need assistance? Does it concern you that their answer to a woman that doesn't have the funds is to terminate the pregnancy instead of saying, well, if you want to keep this child, we'll walk alongside of you? Diapers are expensive, but we'll help you with that. Car seats are expensive, but we'll help you with that. Formula is expensive, but we'll help you with that. So if you're listening to my voice today and you don't stand with me on the life issue, is that okay for you? Those conversations? Do you want to be a movement that peddles despair? That looks at these women in need and who have, in a lot of cases, been abused, been cast aside, been forgotten about? And then you look at them and beat them down further by saying, well, you can't even afford your appointment today. How are you going to be able to afford a baby? Is that now the women empowerment movement? Is that what we're doing as a society? Is that how we empower women, by looking at them and saying, you can't do something? You can't possibly take care of or afford this baby? Is that now the feminist movement? Is that really what it's become today? You see, again, and we talk about this often, but the motivation isn't helping those in need. You see, they're not throwing pizza parties to to the organization that helped the most people. They're throwing pizza parties for those that get the most abortions. What if that particular month, the people that they saw didn't want abortions? And in reality, they help more people by helping them choose life. But you notice they're not awarding and giving incentives for that. They give incentives for those that bring in the most abortions. Folks, that should concern us. Because what that means is the issue or the budget line, the profit margin, matters more than the female in question. The profit margin matters more than the unborn baby in question. And so, yes, I get it. I'm a pro-lifer, so obviously it bothers me. But my question to those that stand with the abortion industry, does that not bother you? You got into this work, you say, to help women, to stand for women, to be pro-woman. Is it pro-women? Is it pro-woman to look a woman in the eye and say, you can't possibly afford this child? Is that pro-woman? What if that child's a little girl? What if that mom wants the baby and knows that she's in tough economic situation? So all I'm trying to do is get you to start thinking about these things. Because that's why we are open at Hope Resource Center. That's why we have a donate tab on our website, investinghope.com, because we want you to partner with us. So when that mom comes in and says, I don't have the money, we can look at them and say, it doesn't matter. You don't have to pay us anything. And you know what? You can come to parenting class. You don't have to pay us anything. And you know what? After parenting class, you're going to get a baby shower. And we're going to provide you with brand new diapers, car seats, clothes. And guess what? You don't have to pay us a dime. Because you matter to us more than the money. We'll be back in a sec.
I've been searching for this answer that only will be found in your love.
And we're back. It's Andrew Wood. Thank you so much for listening. You can learn more about Hope Resource Center at investinghope.com. You can look us up on Facebook, Investing Hope, or on Twitter, Instagram, those places as well. And so you can also listen. You're listening on Joy 620 right now. You can listen online live, wrjz.com. You can do all of that. So we're willing and available on all kinds of areas. Even if you can't listen to the whole show today, we'll have it on podcast by the end of the week, and it'll be up on iTunes and Podbeam and of course on our website as well. So the first segment we focused on the peddling of despair. And the reason that I call it that is because the abortion industry, when their focus is getting the mom into the abortion room, all right? And so whether that be medical or surgical, some way or another, they want to get an appointment on the schedule for you to have an abortion. And so they peddle this despair when you say, well, I don't have the money, or I don't know what I want to do. And then they look at you and say, well, if you don't have the money to pay for this today, do you know how much diapers cost? Do you know how much a car seat is? Do you know how much it really costs to have a baby? So see, it takes that patient into a further place of despair. And so they are in the despair business because they know if they can get you to that point, if they can get you into that weak posture, if they can get you into that moment, that you will probably go through with that decision. And see, what you have at the pregnancy center is something a lot different. We don't peddle anything. We are honest and upfront and transparent and loving and tell the mom that she matters. Tell the mom that baby matters. Tell her that we are for her. And we are going to come alongside of her. And so that is what we do. And the reason that that's important is because we have now created a society. And I talked about this last week. If life in the womb doesn't matter, so hear this. If you know, black lives, blue lives, and every life in between will never matter if life in the womb doesn't matter. Because we're creating a mindset that says some life is more valuable than others. And so if we're telling our kids that, if we're telling our communities that, if we're telling everybody that, then at some point life is just not valuable. And we see this right now going on in Britain. There's wrongful birth lawsuits. Now listen to that. Wrongful birth lawsuits are coming forward. The Sunday Times reports the National Health Service paid the amount about $87 million to more than 16 families in the past 5 years after a high court judge ruled that doctors had been negligent in their cases. The Times reports it's received legal documents related to the case 2 weeks ago. Most of the cases involved screening and doctors' failure to detect abnormalities or inform parents about the risk of their baby having a disability. Parents in all of the cases said they would have had abortions if they had known about their child's disabilities before birth. So hear this again, that the babies have been born. The babies are alive, they are here. And these families are filing wrongful birth lawsuits. So the claims included children with Down syndrome, microcephaly, and a wide range of other conditions, according to the reports. The Christian Institute reports more about one case, and they say the mother had undergone 10 ultrasounds during the course of her pregnancy, but two doctors were found to have failed to carry out their duties correctly in two of them. The couple's daughter is now 8 years old and has microcephaly, which affects the size of her head. Her mother would have aborted her if she was aware of the condition, but says she loves her deeply now. Think about that, folks. That is, you know, last week we talked about there's a legislator overseas in Britain that is disabled. And he's trying to get laws passed that not only to protect the disabled out of the womb, but protect the disabled in the womb. And his words were, "I see the writing on the wall in my people. Those that have disabilities will soon be extinct. They are under attack." That is where we've come as society. Folks, this isn't happening in... these wrongful birth lawsuits aren't happening in third world countries. They're happening in first world countries. They're happening in the powerhouses of the world. The ones that are supposed to be so progressive and so ahead of their time. Science, people that celebrate science. Yet then they attack right where life begins. And so they attack the womb. Or they turn the womb, as I said earlier, into an assembly line. And so women then become a commodity. Which is interesting because a lot of our patients feel that way anyway. They've been treated as a commodity. They've been treated as something that can be traded and sold and abused and used for whatever need possible. And so when we see them, many of them are broken and they need love. They need to be shown that they matter and that they deserve dignity and respect. But instead, they're getting peddled despair when they find themselves in other areas. Or at the abortion clinic. Think about that. That is where we've come as a society. And so we have to at some point understand the damage that is being done. Understand the damage that is being done. And so we can't claim to be progressive. We can't claim to be the saviors of the world. We can't claim to care about refugees if we don't care about the babies that are in the womb. We can't claim to care about refugees if we don't care about moms that feel like everything is stacked against them and they're looking for help. Help doesn't come in the way of you can't do this. You can't afford this. That's not help. That's despair. That's adding on. That is, you know, tonight I'm going to be speaking at a church in Fountain City. Jesus says, go and get your husband, and he knows the answer. And she says, well, I don't have a husband. And he says, well, I know you don't have a husband, and the man that's at your house, you've had five of them, and the man that's currently at your house is not your husband. And so what we see there is Jesus willing to interact with what society would say is an outsider or a floozy or someone that gets around. But Jesus didn't shame her. He didn't attack her. He didn't bully her. He freed her. And maybe for the first time in her life, a man, a Jewish man at that, looked at her and said she mattered and was willing to have a conversation with her that didn't include getting her into the bed. So he didn't see her as a commodity to be bought and sold on the marketplace. He didn't see her as just something that could get his fix. He saw her as a person that deserved love. And so that's why we open our doors at Hope Resource Center, is to provide that. Because if our Savior modeled it, then we need to model it. So this weird definition that we have of feminism, this weird definition of we have of strong woman, hear me roar, where we say you can't afford that, you can't have that baby, you can't. That is the antithesis to what feminism should be. Feminism should say, you don't need that man. The man that abused you, the man that walked out on you, you don't need him. You can have this baby. You can have your dreams. You can have all of that. And we're going to walk alongside of you. That is empowerment. That is, I am woman, hear me roar. Those are the things that we need to be talking about when we talk to these patients. We'll be back. And we're back. It's Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. So today we're talking about dignity. We're talking about how the abortion industry will peddle despair, and so they want to take a patient that finds themselves at a weak place or a weak posture or finds themselves in despair, and they go on top of that, so they compound that and make it worse, and they in those cases, many of those cases, they will then schedule to have an abortion, and so as I was talking about this, I thought it was interesting. I pulled up Twitter, and Planned Parenthood tweeted out from an attorney in California, one of their attorneys. It says, if this federal funding goes away, California and Planned Parenthood stand to lose $265 million. Now, they would probably say those dollars represent people, but why wouldn't you say if that funding goes away, people will hurt? They don't say that because their concern, again, is money. And they even say in the article, if you go and read the article at rewire.news, you see where they say this will stop our revenue stream, which I thought they were nonprofits, but this will stop their revenue stream. And so it's interesting that the mindset is we just need this money. Now, what they don't say is they're performing 300,000 abortions every single year, and they're the largest abortion provider in the country, and every one of those abortions are provided at a cost to the patient. And they claim that none of the federal dollars go to take care of that abortion. And so if that is true, they are making in the upward millions and billions of dollars off of abortion alone. If you look at it from a business standpoint, should be able to subsidize a lot of the other things that they do. Also, they could fundraise, and they do a lot of fundraising. They gave $30 million to Hillary Clinton's campaign back during the election. So that $30 million probably could have took care of a lot of people, maybe. I don't want to get catty or anything, but that's just, something to think about, something to look at. And so what does this mean for our country? What does this mean for pro-lifers? What does this mean for, pro-life legislation and Supreme Court decisions and all of this? And so I don't want to get in the weeds of politics, but I came across an article by a pastor, and he's a pastor out west in kind of the North Dakota area. I'm not sure exactly the state he's in, but it's one of those states. And an interesting guy, an amazing writer, and so I read a lot of his stuff. But he wrote a blog recently about kind of the climate that we currently see in this country, and it's a climate of progressives and conservatives and decisions that are made at the legislative level and decisions that are made through the courts. And I just thought it was interesting. And so his take is, he said, let's contemplate for a moment the coming opportunity to end human abortion in America. And let us also contemplate how the opportunity for this was created by the lack of impulse control on the left, and the left he is calling progressives. And he says, we must begin by noticing an instinctive and characteristic difference between conservatives and progressives. And he goes on and he explains that the difference is conservatives typically go by the rule of law. And if the rule of law says this, then we're not going to go against the rule of law. We'll fight it in the courts. We want to make sure our legislation, passes the Constitution test and everything before we bring it forward, because we believe in the rule of law and in the Constitution. And so so it's interesting, and what he does is he looks at both sides and says one side celebrates the rule of law, one side celebrates it when it goes in their favor, and then kind of puts it to the side when it doesn't. And so here's a paragraph that I found interesting. In other words, there was a time when true gentlemen could oppose one another in the Senate of the United States, take decidedly different views of a particular piece of legislation, battle one another according to the rules, and then remain friends. Oh, that's what a novel idea. That era only runs anymore in grainy black and white over on Nick at Night. We are at the point where virtually everyone has noticed what has happened to our republic, including Mitch McConnell. He is the one who kept the Scalia seat open until after the election, when it would have been easy for him to go squish. And so what we see here is we see that those days seem to be, now we can long for those days and pray that those days would come back, but those days of disagreeing and then walking away friends seem to be a thing of the past, at least in front of the cameras. I used to work in politics, and I will tell you, the demeanors and the things that you saw on camera were a lot different than what you saw behind the scenes when they were out to dinner. And maybe one day I'll write a book and explain all that. But it was definitely a different type of posture between Democrats and Republicans alike. So it's interesting. He goes further. Before the election, ask a California progressive if states had the right to secede from the union. And they would say, not on your life. But then their president didn't win. And now you ask a progressive if states have the right to defy federal law. And they say, of course. Well, what about smoking? What about legalizing marijuana or sanctuary cities? And they say yes, because the outcome is what they want. So regardless of what the federal law says, they want to push their agenda. And he says Colorado decided that they would just legalize marijuana. Federal law didn't matter to them. And what happened here is that they established the principle that a state can just go ahead and make their own laws. Chicago just decided that they were going to be a sanctuary city forever. And so a lot of things are happening, and he poses an interesting question, and that's what I want to focus on. Now, if Colorado, he says, Colorado hippies can get stoned in defiance of federal law, why can't Idaho conservatives protect the babies in defiance of federal law? If San Francisco can say that they had a moral duty to protect illegal immigrants from the feds, why can't Alabama say they have a moral duty to protect those who were legally conceived from the feds? And so it's an interesting thing to think about, and Douglas Wilson is provocative, and he says things that kind of make people cringe and make people uncomfortable. But it is an interesting question. So what is the goal? Is the goal the rule of law? Is the goal to just do it and say, we dare you to argue against it? what would happen if, you know, we have some pro-life legislation coming up in the state of Tennessee that, that has some folks a little nervous. The heartbeat bill. And you should Google it and look it up. You have folks on the pro-life side, some saying, yes, run with it. Some saying, no, don't run with it. That's not going to help our cause. It's going to be deemed unconstitutional. But what Douglas Wilson, the argument he makes is, who cares what federal law says? Let the states decide what they want to do. And that sounds good, maybe, for some, but is that the path that we need to go down? Does that then put us in the same company? Is our goal, so again, is our goal to just beat the other side, or is our goal to get back to the rule of law and see legislation pass the proper way and see legislation go through the proper channels and see court decisions done properly and not pushing agendas that may or may not be constitutional? So all these questions, and maybe you're listening and saying, well, what does that have to do with what we're doing? Well, all these questions matter because of human dignity. And so the question is, should we defund Planned Parenthood? Should we defund the largest abortion provider in the country? Now the other side would say, well, but you don't understand. We have the Hyde Amendment. The Hyde Amendment doesn't allow any federal dollars to go toward abortion. So no federal dollars are actually going to or providing abortions. Now, people like me say, well, that's hogwash. and you can't. You can claim that the funds are separate. But again, I just read you the tweet where they're saying that if they're defunded in California alone, they're going to lose $265 million, and some of those places are going to have to close up. And so if that is true, then what that means is that $265 million that California clinics are receiving, that California abortion clinics are receiving from the federal government, mine and your tax dollars, what that means is those dollars allow them to provide abortion. So they really made our case for us. So the very fact that they're saying they're going to have to close their doors tells us that the federal dollars allows them to keep their doors open to provide the 300,000 abortions that they provide every single year. So that should be a no-brainer. You know, I've often given the example of, you think back in the day, you had mobsters that operated in cities. They did a lot of terrible things. They would go and shake down business owners for money. They would people would die. They would murder. They would do all these things. But at Thanksgiving, what would they do? They'd go into those communities and they would provide turkeys for the families. They would provide Thanksgiving dinners for families in need. So kids grew up looking up to the mob guy, because he had money, he was powerful, he helped my family out. But we would have never said, let's write them a check willingly. Let's give them tax dollars because look at all the great stuff they're doing in our communities. Well, no, the great stuff was overshadowed by the bad stuff. And so when we look at the abortion industry, when we look at what's going on, and they argue that they're nonpartisan, but then they give millions and millions of dollars to one particular party, and they are constantly lobbying, and they're constantly looking to get court cases taken care of, and they're attacking pregnancy centers, and they're trying to get legislation that would hurt those that stand in opposition to them. It sounds pretty partisan. And then on top of all that, when you tell us none of those dollars, none of those reimbursements from the federal government are going to provide abortions, but then you tell us if those dollars are pulled and taken away, that they're going to have to close up shop. Well, then that proves my point, that those dollars are allowing you to provide the abortions that you're providing. And my tax dollars shouldn't do that. Now, obviously, some people would disagree with me on that. But see, these are the logical conversations we need to be having. Not angry, not fussing, not yelling, not hateful rhetoric, in 2-minute sound bites or whatever on Twitter and other places, but an actual sit down conversation where we talk about logical conclusions, how tax dollars should be spent logically, how women should be taken care of logically, how families should be taken care of logically, how the unborn need to be taken care of. Because if we could have that conversation, just imagine how far we could go. Even with people that disagree with us, I think we could find a lot of common ground. Because I think everybody, mostly everybody, would agree the womb should not be an assembly line. Despair should not be peddled. And women should not be seen as a commodity to be traded on the market. And their womb shouldn't be seen that way either. We'll finish up when we come back.
Just leave it to me. I lead you home.
Back, it's Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Again, you can learn more about Hope at investinghope.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, all of those places. We'll have this show up on podcast by the end of the week, and you can find it on iTunes, on our website, and also Podbeam. And so we'll put it out there for you, and you can share it with your friends and bring more people into the conversation. Again, that is the goal. A lot of times when we talk about these issues and the issue of life, the issue of abortion, the issue of funding for abortion clinics and funding for pro-life clinics and all of those things, what tends to happen is we won't allow each other to hear other people out. And so my goal here is not to shout other people down. The goal is let's have a conversation. Now, granted, we have very deep dividing passions and stances when it comes to these issues. But let us at least get to a point where we all can agree that people matter more than the issue. And so if we believe that, then let's be willing to have a conversation with someone that disagrees with us. Let's be willing to sit down and have that conversation, not be angry. And like what we saw back in the day, now granted, you didn't see a ton of this, but where people could have gentlemen disagreements and walk away friends. And instead, what we see now is we see families torn apart because of political divisions. We see friendships broken because of political divisions, and that shouldn't be the case. And so, yes, we should be engaged. Yes, we should know what we're talking about. Yes, we should look through all of these issues. But we also should be willing to have a conversation and not just shout people down. Because shouting people down will not move anything. Yeah, it'll rally up your base. It'll you know, you're preaching to the choir, but it ultimately will not move the needle in the direction it needs to move. And so the goal isn't just to shout people down. The goal is to have logical discussions about these issues that matter so greatly. And so I hope that you can do that. I hope that we help you do that. One thing I do want to point out right before I get off the air is tonight I'll be at a church. Tomorrow night I'll be at a church. Tonight it's at Temple in Fountain City. Tomorrow, Shoreline. As we talk about missions, we talk about the work that we're able to do at Hope Resource Center and the work that we're able to do with our partners. And so I would appreciate your prayers. If you want to join us, you can investinghope.com. Click on that donate button. You can also email me, Andrew@KnoxvilleHope.com. I'll be happy to help you in any way I can. We also have a banquet coming up, our 20-year celebration, and that's April 27th. And you'll be hearing more about that between now and April. And so looking forward to that. But if you want to join us, you want to meet some of the staff and hear from a patient or two about their stories and their babies and the dreams that they have achieved with that. And we hope to bring all that to you at that banquet and in videos between now and then as well. So we thank you so much for standing with us and standing for life, because that is what we've been called to do as believers. And there's nothing like it. When we look at our patients, when we look at their babies via ultrasound, to say that not only does that baby in the womb matter, but that mom matters to us. And so you allow us to do that because we don't receive the federal money. We don't receive the state money. The money that we receive, it comes from you. It comes from businesses, and it comes from churches. And we could not thank you more for your support and your partnership and the work that you allow us to do and the work that you allow us to be a part of. So thank you so much. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. It's going to be fun. Talk to you soon.